This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, thank you, Hilly. Thank you for coming tonight. Thank you, everyone, for being here. From the main Beis Medrash of Har Yitzchak in Flatbush, as we inch our way toward Kabbalah Satara, beginning of the Shloshes Simei Hagbalah, I wondered, as I was attempting very hard to park over here in the rain today, I have a kasha. The kasha is, how come no one ever pulls out of a legal spot? Whenever you see a legal spot, there's always someone pulling into it. But you're not sure if the car's going in or going out. I can tell you for sure he's going in. And whenever you see a car pulling out, he's always pulling out of an illegal spot. Like a pump or something. Right. So I wondered if all the cars that are pulling into legal spots only pull in and never pull out. So l'chayra, at one point, the system should collapse or plots, no? But then again, that's what it is. I'm still yet to see a car pulling out of a legal spot. And then you always wonder, when you drive down the streets of Flatbush over here, how do all these other people find spots? All the streets are full, right? So this fellow tells me that he lives in Kentucky, and he lives on a farm, and there's plenty of parking places. He can park a whole brigade. He also says that right now he's struggling because there are no jobs and no schools for his kids. So I said, you can park in the Sahara Desert also, but it doesn't really help, right? He also told me that he has a big, beautiful house, but it gives him a lot of that he bought for, I don't know what he said, $70,000 or $80,000. That was expensive. I don't know, 25-room house, big, huge, wide house. He said there are no basements. The reason there are no basements in his area is because they don't need the basements. See, in Borough Park in New York, people dig down, they dig up, anything they say don't yawn too loud because a couple will move in to your mouth. That's how pressed people are for apartments. But over there, there's no need for a basement or an attic. They just make the house as wide as it can be. And it's like a 3-mile drive from one neighbor to the next. So I said, so what's your Agmas Nefesh? The quiet? He says, no, there's no one there to see his nice house. What's the point of having a nice house if there's no one there to see it? Aha. You know the story, there's a farmer on a field, and he's sitting on a rocking chair, and they come over to him, and they say, Walmart really wants to buy this area. And he says that he has absolutely no intention of selling it. So they tell him, with the money you can make, you can invest in some stock, and you can be rich the rest of your life, and you can just sit on a rocking chair and do nothing. He said, I'm already doing that. So what do I accomplish? Why would I want to do it? I'm back to square one. I'm doing what I'm doing. By the way, good news, Rabbi Sain, when we're talking about parking, they say meters are going up. The price for meters. You don't pay meters, okay. And the reason the meters are going up is, they said, is only to make room for more parking. How does that make room for more parking? I don't know. Price of milk should go up, then there'll be more milk. I'm not sure exactly how this works.
Less people will buy.
Less people will park. That's all. I'm just not going to park. That's all. I mean, I understand if the price of sushi goes up, there's less sushi. But the price of meters goes up, so less people. I'm just not going to park. That's all. What are you going to do? I don't know. Sleep in the car. Shiloh, Muktzah, Shabbos, and Yom Tov gets very complicated. Nah, Chasho, no double parks in Borough Park. Triple parking, maybe just. I'm not double parking. That to decide on me is double parking. How do you argue who was there first? So Be'emes Rabbeisai. So the argument is that if it costs more money, it'll turn over more. People will come in and move more, and therefore there's more opportunities to be able to cut someone off and park as he's trying to park. But along those lines, so a higher price forces us to reaccommodate ourselves and to move around. Like many things in life force us to move around. Why is it, and we'll get back to this in a moment, why is it that when it comes to Sfiras HaOmer, why do we count up as opposed to counting down? If we're really so excited about Shavuos, we're so unbelievably excited about Shavuos, it's can't wait for Shavuos. Mamish can't wait. So it should be 49, 48, 47, 40, until, 3, 2, 1, yay! Why are we counting up? We should count the other way. We should be counting tonight 3 more days. Anyone want to suggest something? I understand there's so many people here that nobody wants to call out. It shouldn't create chaos. Really, there's a lot of people here. They just watched until it's nine. They can't answer. Otherwise, they might have answered. All right, so one of the pshatim that they say is as follows. And again, let me try to explain it with a mashal. Again, our kasha is why the price, well, that's the two kashas we have so far. Why the price of meters somehow is going to help parking. And the other is, I'm going to have to be pretty, shall we say, imaginative to answer all these kashas. And the other is, why do we count up Sfiras HaOmer as opposed to counting down? Do you ever have the sense, okay, we go to our third kasha now, because when you have no terutzim, you always go to the next kasha, that's the rule. Let's say you're looking for something, you're really missing something, you're desperately looking for it. So what do you do? You say Rav Binyamin, correct. So there's something in your drawer, you can't find it, so you could either continue looking in your drawer, or you can do what some of us do is, you remove the entire drawer from the desk, turn it over, and dump all the contents onto the table or onto the floor. Get rid of the shelving paper, clean early for Pesach, and then start again. Start reorganizing everything, throwing out the things you don't need, reorganizing what you have, until you hopefully either get or don't get to what you have. That's what I did today, and I saw it was in my pocket the whole time. Well, Lamaisa, I did over the whole drawer. So at one point, it's not enough just to look. At one point, you just have to start again. And basically what happens is, there's this kind of a concept or an idea, is that after Pesach, what is it? Basically, a Kadosh Baruch Hu dumps everything on the floor. Okay, now I yanked you in. Kadosh Baruch Hu yanked us into Pesach. Now that we dumped everything on the floor, we have to put everything back into the desk. And therefore, this time we're going to put it in a very, very organized, neat fashion. Like when you empty out, you're looking for something in your glove compartment, right? When you're very desperate, you just empty the whole contents onto the floor. When you're going to put it back, when you get a chance in a couple of months from now, you're going to slowly start putting things back into the glove compartment, this into this compartment. And basically, that's the mashal. So after Pesach, what does the Kadosh Baruch Hu do? He says, okay, now we're going to start organizing your life. A week of chesed, week of gevura, week of tferes, week of netzach, of hoyed, yisoyed, malchus, and the combination of each one. And as we inch our way from Pesach to Shavuos, I hope by the time Shavuos comes, everything is back in the drawer and organized the way it should in terms of our midos. Now, a lot of the new subway stations, they have this sign, tells you how long it's going to take for the next train to show up, or you have an app on your phone, or you call up. So you're counting down, right? The next train will be here in 3 minutes, 2 minutes, 1 minute, and it's not here. Oh, start again. But 3 minutes, 2 minutes, 1 minute. Actually, somebody explained to me, something's like blowing on the tracks, and they think it's a train. I'm not sure that's true or not. But I understand, if it's empty time, if you're wasting your time, you're totally wasting your time. So you can't wait until the wasted time is over. So you're counting down, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. But if I'm giving you a list of things to accomplish, and I'm saying, okay, here's 6 hours, on the first hour I want you to do this, on the second hour I want you to do that, then you're counting up. Okay, Baruch Hashem, first hour, we took care of the chesed within us. Second week, taking care of the gvura. So try to imagine like this. You're preparing for a wedding. And all of a sudden you realize that there's only 2 Sundays left. And you go, oh no, how am I going to do this? So you can sit down and start crying and say, oh no, there's only 6 hours left, 5 hours left, 4 hours left, go to the chuppah, that's all. You have to go to the chuppah wearing some in pajamas. But it doesn't happen, right? You ever saw a kala go to the chuppah not in a white gown? So at one point, as much as we plan out what we're going to do before a wedding, comes to the last week, we cram it all in, and we're very, very meticulous in what we do in that last week to make sure that everything falls into place. But lamaisa, we make it to the wedding, because there really isn't that much of a choice. Right? What are we going to do before Pesach? So a good, balabasta, famcha, mishasa, b'shvat, she starts figuring out day by day what she's going to do. And then, of course, you don't go according to schedule, and you start panicking, and you're rushing. But you know anyone that didn't make it to the Seder this year? Now, by default, what happens is we reorganize and reorganize, and Adirab, there's only 4 hours left, or 4 days left, we're even much more focused to make sure to use every minute the way we should. And that's the idea. As we get closer to Shavuos, the Svarim say, okay, suppose you didn't do what you were supposed to in the last 7 weeks, then these Shloshes Yimei Hagbalah become very pivotal. They say, listen, the wedding, we can't push off the wedding. Shavuos is Shavuos. So a lot has to take place in these 3 days. The Russian government announced today, take it or leave it, that they located a woman who is, according to the birthday of her passport, 128 years old. That's how old she is. She was driving a tractor trailer. No, that didn't say that. Back then they had passports, yes. It's a pension fund that she came in for her pension. She decided to come in for her pension, like 85 years too late. And she kept pushing it off from when she turned 60, when she signed it now. She figured she doesn't do it now. And they looked at her passport, and her birthday, this was in the news today, her birthday was June 1st, 1889. That was her birthday. Right? The Chavetz Chaim is in the prime of his life. Think what's going on, 1889, right? Rav Chaim, the Divrei Chaim, the sons of Rav, right? So it turns out they were saying that she was 27 years old when Tsar Nikolai was toppled. She was 55 years old when World War II was over. And her story was that she lived in Chechnya, and she was exiled with the entire her entire town to Kazakhstan and Siberia because Stalin accused them of being Nazi sympathizers. And the idea was that this entire town was exiled to some remote place in Siberia, where most people disappeared and were never seen again. The only question, who got them first? The hunger, the cold, or the polar bears? You know, that was the race. But those were the choices, A, B, and C. None of the above was not a choice. And somehow she survived. You know, she and who knows if she would have survived, right? We don't know what would have happened had she remained back in Chechnya. Chechnya is not a very safe place over the last couple of years. So I think that the idea is if it's Bashar to live, you live. You know, you're sent to Siberia, you can become the oldest person in the world. But whatever happened in her life, the Rabbi Yishev said, listen, she, whatever, me'ezah si b'shehi, it was Bashar, she's going to make it till 128. Our life goes with a schedule. And sometimes it's our fault that we fall behind in the schedule. By Shavuos, we have to catch up. Because we're so interlinked with each other. We're so connected. Where everyone has to stand around Har Sinai at a specific point. We're makabel the Torah for this year. That what happens during the Shloshes Yimei Hagbalah is, it's like a way that the Rebbe Hashem says, okay, I'll help you, just go. Your supervisor comes in and just, you know, helps you with the work. But I got to get done before the deadline. There is no choice. The chasen and the kala have to be ready. You can't get the gown a week after the wedding. It says in the Sefer of Avodas Yisrael, V'ata im shemaya tishmu b'kaili. So Yetzirah's biggest power, his killer, his missile, is his strongest missile, his supersonic missile is, hey, you blew it. Past the deadline. It's too late. Not too late. It's never too late. You're alive. It's not V'ata. It's not too late. Says the Sefer Avodas Yisrael from the Kajan Samagadam, Yimachras Yom HaShabbos, Tisperu Chamishim Yom, even if you're up to Shavuos already. You're up to Erev Shavuos, and I blew it, this fear of Soimer. I did nothing in terms of what I was supposed to do to prepare it, Tisperu Chamishim Yom. Whatever it could take should have taken place over 7 weeks could take place during the Shloshes Yimei Hagbalah. So just before the Shir, someone who asked me not to say his name told me really a beautiful story. It is a very powerful, beautiful story if we can incorporate it into our lives. He said that he was looking to sell his house and purchase a different house. A friend of mine, very tiring man. Which never works out, you know. It just doesn't happen. And if everything would go according to plan means, you know, mortgage brokers, and plan means banks, and plans mean lawyers, and plans means buyers and sellers, and then it was perfect. He was going to sell his house, and 2 weeks later, he was going to purchase a different house. And everything went according to plan. And he sold his house, and he had 2 weeks to stay in his house. And according to his contract, if he would be there for more than 2 weeks, he would have to start paying penalties and rents and so on. And then, you know, he's all set to go to closing, whatever the details were, but all of a sudden his lawyer calls and says, we have a problem with the title of the new house you're buying. My recommendation, don't buy it. I mean, don't buy it. I have no place to go. 2 weeks I'm moving. The moving trucks are coming. So we'll tell them to put everything into storage. We'll have to pay for storage. And what are we going to do with me and my family? We'll put ourselves into storage? And where? I should move into the Statler Hill? Like, where am I going to go? You know? The lawyer said, I really highly recommend you do not buy the second house because you're going to have problems with this title. You invited me into your house? No. So he said, coming into Shabbos, they were really talking about they were stuck between a rock and a hard place. They had sold their old house, and here they're told they can't go into a new house, and the pressure is on. What do you mean? I'm going to sue you, and back and forth. So they decided that before Shabbos, there's really nothing they can do about it right now. They'll deal with it after Shabbos. There's nothing they can do to make this situation any easier than it was. We'll deal with it after Shabbos. And he tells me right now that the serenity that he had that Shabbos, he craves for. What happened at the end? I don't know what happened at the end. Yeah. It's not even important. The Baruch Hashem, I don't think he slept outside on the street. I didn't see any family sleeping on Avenue J. And whatever. Things pressed themselves out. But he says sometimes there's no choice. You come into a Shabbos, there's no choice. Because if I'm going to let myself worry, I'm finished. Whatever's going to be is going to be. It's Shabbos. And I think that's a little bit the idea that sometimes when the price goes up, there are more spaces. When in life, when the challenge gets stronger and stronger, we're forced to deal with it. And I think as you get older and the pressures of life, and the more stories you hear of people that are, you know, struggling with all kinds of different things, you have no choice but to say, come Shavuos, goodbye, Kabbalah Satar. My life is starting again. So what does it say by Matan Torah? Parcha Nishmasan, they died, poof. And Hashem brought them back to life. So the Sfasen says, really what it is, a kind of restart. You know what I mean? Because the Yetzirah says, you blew it. You'll never be able to fix it. We'll restart you. We'll restart it. Hashem says during the Shloshis Mekbalah, I took out the desk. I dumped it on the ground. I'm putting everything in. Now sometimes when you dump it on the ground, things hurt. You dump it on the ground, things aren't so geschmack. It's not so easy. So I want to tell you a story. I want to tell you the story in three parts. The last part first. Then the second part, and then the first part. And you'll soon see why we're doing it this way. We spoke last week about Rav Shlomka of Zevil, the big tzaddik in Yerushalayim. And Rav Shlomka, when someone asked him a question, he would go to the mikveh, and as soon as his head would even bob out of the water, he would tell the person, do the operation, don't do the operation, your child will have a refuah shleima, and so on. It was mamash open wife seminar. I have spoken to people that remember and saw it clearly. There were times he would come out and say, I don't have an answer for you yet. Come back tomorrow. Don't have an answer for you yet. Come back tomorrow. And somebody once asked him, he said, how come yesterday you answered everybody on the spot? He said, yesterday I had keys to Shemai. And now you also have keys, but just you have to open a few outer doors before you get to it. So how come yesterday you had keys to Shemayim, more so than today? Part two. Here's part two of the story. Part two of the story, there's a Yotzei Tzuda for Reb Shlomka, and everyone's saying different stories, and this guy gets up to say a story. Who? I don't know. Itcher Kloinemus gets up to say a story. And this is the story that he says. He says, many years ago, we had nothing for Shabbos. And when we say nothing for Shabbos, we mean one piece of chakash cake instead of two. But they had nothing. I mean, they didn't have the leaven. And my wife had it, and I'm coming home from the mikveh, and she slams the door shut, and she says, unless you bring money, let me make myself perfectly clear. Stay out! And he told her, he commended her that she did make herself perfectly clear. It was not vague. And he says that he thought he's doomed. He's sleeping on the street. Like, I don't know, he was thinking suicide. I don't know what he was thinking. And all of a sudden, Rav Eliyarat, who was Rav Shlomka's gabbai, came running and gave him an envelope, which was money to get him not only through that Shabbos, but through the next couple of Shabbosim. Mamish Ruach HaKadosh. The Rebbe knew. Now part one of the story. Reb Shlomka is going to the mikveh Erev Shabbos, and he hangs up his clothes, and as he's coming out of the mikveh, someone says, "Get your clothes away from me! Oh, this is my place!" And he grabs it and tosses it all over the place. And the Rebbe himself had to go pick up his socks and a shirt from a different place because the Gabbai was standing outside. Do you understand the sequence in this story? Once he had those bezyonis, he felt that he had a much stronger koich of brach. He also felt that if this guy's acting this way, he must be in big trouble. Instead of saying, "I'm going to get even for you for talking that way," he said, how much pressure could it be under than he did it? So let's go back to part three, part two, part one. Yeah, part three, Rav Shlomka has instant access because he said if you have bezyonis, if you have crazy pressure, then you have instant access to bracha. So this young man tells me he wishes he can get back the serenity of that Shabbos. He wishes he could. It's not so easy. Part two of the story is, Rav Shlomka Mifas brings him the money just when he needed it. It wasn't so much Ruach HaKadosh, it was deeper than Ruach HaKadosh. It was, if you can do this to my clothes, you must be in trouble, they better help you. And part one is that of course he had the power of bracha in a way that he normally didn't have. He had the power of bracha in a way that he normally didn't have because he had those bezyonis. He says very often, chas v'shalom was b'shed that a person should, even a chi of misa. It could even be a chi of misa on someone. I mean, because he has bezyonis, the bezyonis takes away the chi of misa. It's one of the greatest gifts of Shemayim that the Bairi Olam gives us. But you understand that you heard the story in the opposite order. You would have heard it straight. So our lives, okay, whether it's after 120 or 128, if we were counting down, then everything would go according to the chronology that we would think things work. That's not necessarily true. And that's why we count up Sphira. We don't count down Sphira. We count up Sphira. Because trust me, whatever's going on in your life, it looks like it's topsy-turvy, but there's a cheshbon to it. Is that old joke, how does the story go? The guy comes for a job as a woodchopper. He goes, "Where did you work till now?" He says, "In the Sahara forest." He goes, "Do your research. It's a Sahara desert. Don't come and try to get a job as a woodchopper and tell me you worked in the Sahara forest." He says, No. He says, "I worked in the Sahara forest as a woodchopper. I did such a good job that that's why now it's the Sahara desert." Though lots of things don't make sense. Until the Rabbeinu Shalom will reassemble our chronology. I remember when I was in yeshiva, there was a man, he was an administrator for a big yeshiva. And three times he told me somebody gave him a check, after much persistence. And each time, the check bounced. He was always short. Like if you gave him a $5,000 check, he made sure to have only $4,900 in the bank. Until the bank manager was upset about this, says, "You could really fix his wagon." What did he do? Next time he did it to him, he deposited $100 into his check, into his account, and then drew the whole $5,000. The guy was not a very happy camper. But I'm thinking in our lives, how many times does this happen? We're asking the Rabbeinu Shalom for something, instead he's taking it from us. What are you doing? I'm asking you. I need a resolution to a problem. Instead, I just found that I have to wait another 6 weeks. The Rabbeinu Shalom says, trust me. Trust me on the chronology. So it says Hashem counted Klal Yisrael, right? How did Hashem count Klal Yisrael? Three times, Rashi says at the beginning. They came out of Mitzrayim, Hashem counted them. After the Chet Egel, Hashem counted them by the Binyan HaMishkan. So the Ber Moshe says, this is life. Kadosh Baruch Hu sends us down into this world with a very, very perfect schedule. Perfect schedule. And we blow it. Kadosh Baruch Hu recounts us. Okay, I just dumped you all over the floor. Got to stop picking up all the pieces. And now I'm going to figure out how to make it work. The Mishkan has to go up on time. So I want to share this last story with you. Rav Moshe points out very strongly that there was a count of how many Yidden. Torah says, Su'u. And if one Yid was missing, then the word in the Torah that counted that person would be incorrect. The whole Sefer Torah would be puzzle. So there's no choice. You are indispensable as a human being. And that's why Parshas Bamidbar is always read before Shavuos, to show there's no choice. Hashem has to fix you. So you may as well let yourself get fixed. So here's our story. There's this guy who's a tailor, and the Paritz comes, And the Paritz's jacket doesn't fit. And he finally calls in three of his kids. One pulls on one side, the other kid pulls on the other side. He managed to close his button. And boom, the button shoots through the window, breaks the window, heads to Australia. Well, at least that's how you say it in Perche. But you got the idea. And the Paritz says he's very angry at him. He tells the Paritz, it's not my fault that you have grown. Bisgewachsen, you know. It's from when I measured you till when you're putting this on. There's another 50 pounds over there. So he says, give me two times the amount of the schayr I had till now, because I assume you're going to get another 50 pounds. So the pirate says, I'm not paying you, and of course he blames the yidala. And he's saying, listen, you know, the pirate says, I thought you were going to make me look thin, not a jacket that's bursting at the seams. So he tells the pirates, like Benny Bielik's old line in his tapes, he says, I'm a tailor, not a magician, right? So the pirate says, you know, you do have a good sense of humor. How'd you like to come and make jokes by my party? I'll pay you for that. Comedians make money. But don't make jokes about my weight. You need to make fun of the Jews. So he starts doing this. And his wife says, are you out of your mind? You're going to these parties, looking at things you shouldn't look at? Seeing things you shouldn't... What? And making fun of Yidden? He says, parnasa is parnasa. It's a mitzvah to have parnasa. And meanwhile, to make a long story short, his matzav is really going down the drain. But not stam. Way down the drain. And by now, his wife left him, his kids are out of here. It's really bad. And then at one point, you know, he does the same joke again. So Rosenberg and Cohn opened up a law office. Like, oh, come on. They're saying that joke is so boring. We've heard it so many times already. And the pirate says, your jokes are getting boring. You know, you're boring us. He goes, you can't send me out because I can't go back to my wife and kids and I can't go back to the Yidden. So they told him, you need more schayr to make fun of Jews. So one of the Paritz's guests had a suggestion. He said, there's a certain Rebbe showing up a certain place. Go over there, watch his tish, and you'll get some new ideas to make, you know. So of course he goes, and he's standing there, and he's watching the chassidim jump for the shirayim, and now he has good schayr. You know, he's ready. He would write down his jokes, but he's committing it to memory. Suddenly the Rebbe stops in the middle, he wants to say Torah. And the Rebbe starts talking about Shmiras Anayin, and he starts talking about Shmiras HaPen, he starts talking how there are times in our life we're really up against a straight wall. And the Sutton says, here, I'm giving you your Nisayin on a silver platter. And the Rebbe says, which is a verse attributed to Rav Shlomo Kavzavil, he says, Kalm is an ice of Shalom, is Ketsuva Mayim Rashan, Rashan, it doesn't just mean food. Every amount, it's measured to the hundredth of a millimeter. How much Hano you're going to have in this world, how much Simcha you're going to have, how much pressure. Now, if it's hard for you to wake up in the morning to go to learning, you force yourself to do it, you really want to look, and there's a certain amount of tzar, and you don't look at something, you want to say a word of Lashon Hara, and you hold yourself back, you close your phone before davening, it's hard, you're not going to suffer anymore. There's a certain amount of suffering. Just Adram, you gain by that. And if you engage in a taiva that he says, you think if you make parnasa where you're not supposed to make parnasa, you're not going to have a red cent more, and then he builds it up more and more and more, and how people are... At one point, he bursts into tears. He realizes the Rebbe is talking to him, and Matzah Shabbos, he falls to the feet of the Rebbe, and he begs for a tshuva. So first the Rebbe summons his wife and children, and tells them that you have to accept his tshuva, they don't have anything to do with him. He says, no, you don't know that it's signed for parnasa. Now the Rebbe is taking his side, and says, I want you to accept him. So his wife said, how do we know he's sincere? Tomorrow he does the same thing. So the Rebbe said, no, he's not ready to come home yet. I need you to know that you accept him. And the Rebbe told him, I want you to go to a certain town, and I want you to be there. I want you to be there the entire week in the Beis Medrash. Sleep on the bench. Be Isaac fast during the day. You come home only for Shabbos. So he goes to this certain town, Lemberg, and he asks the Shabbos if he can stick around at night in the Beis Medrash. The Shabbos says no. He begs. He pleads. He says I'll help him out. Fine, great. And he said, I need a place to hide during the week. And he tells the Shabbos the whole story. He says my whole tshuva depends on it. So the Shamus showed him that if you take off the cover of the bima, typical play scene. There's a secret stairs that goes down. There's a bunker that they had in case for pogroms. You know what I mean? We'll see afterwards. We'll take off. And they opened it up, and you'll be there the entire week. And Friday, before I leave, I'll open it up so you can go home for Shabbos. And they did that constantly. When I was at night, he would come out and wander around the shul. By day, he spent his time in his bunker. And of course, one Friday came, and the Shabbos forgot to open it. And he was like fasting almost from Shabbos to Shabbos. And he felt he was dying. and the Shamus wasn't there, and he was banging away. And at one point, he realized the Shamus either forgot or deliberately left it. Either way, he figured that's it. And he started doing tshuva, and he said, you know, it's Shabbos. He said, listen, for all the chil Shabbos I caused and the pain. And he did his best to sing Zmirois. He did his best, like, to cry out to the Rabbi Shalom. He reached a level of tshuva that was almost impossible. Middle of the night, he hears banging. The Shamus comes running and says, come on out, come on out. I totally forgot. I'm sorry. He said, I brought you a piece of fish. He says, no, I'm not eating yet. I want to go home for Kiddush. Shamus said, can I have the fish? Yeah, you can. And as he walks home, he comes in. His family doesn't want to let him in, and he tells them the story. He says, I was ready to die. I can't have any more tshuva than that. He said, you're going to sit down by the table and sing Zmiris after all that time of the party? He said, I sang Zmiris in that hole. So his wife let him in. And he did his best. And the next part of the story is that the Rav of Lemberg, a couple of weeks later, goes for a walk and with the Shamus, middle of the night, because he had a Shver Rambam to think through, and they see this. The Shamus says, fire! And they go running. They run to, and the Shamus says, no, nothing here. And a few times it kept happening. They realize the light's going out when they come close. So finally, he knocks on the door and the tailor comes out. He says, what's this light? Nah, it's nothing. What's this light? It's nothing. If you think it's a computer that's on, I'm telling you it's not. It wasn't even invented yet. I don't do it anymore. So finally he says to him that apparently he was zeichet to some level of Gili Elio that comes every single night. And he tells him his story. And so the Rav says, I have to stop it because the whole Olam is still mocking you. They're still laughing at you. They're still like looking down at you. They're saying, your wife, had Rachmanis, and she took you in. He said, please don't stop it because I'm going to lose my Gili Elio. And he asked him, how do you know it's Elio? Maybe it's some Kayach of Tumah. He said, that's a good question. I'll ask Elio, are you really you? How do I know it's you? So Elio told him that Kolzman, he's coming to learn. You're going to see no one's going to die before their time. That's how it went several years. And once they came to tell the Rav, somebody passed away suddenly, and the Rav frightened. He said, what's with the, oh, that old tailor? Yeah, he died. We didn't bother telling you the old tailor died. And the Rav burst into tears, and so goes the story. Now, a story is a story for what it is, but the story is a story. Because it's going to be that Shabbos that's going to be the most difficult Shabbos. And you say, you know what? By hook or crook, that's it, Ribbono Shel Olam. The parking meters went up so high, that's it. I'm in your hands. Whatever it's going to be, is going to be. You could be zeichet to a serenity in our own level, a level of ashrayas hashchina, every time you feel a little bit good about yourself, and you say, whatever's going to be is going to be, Rabbi Hashem in your hands, says the morale, that within itself is a b'china of Gili Elio.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.